New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge. And you can tell it's getting cold in Winnipeg because he's got to cover up the dome. Also, JC Abbott on the West Coast. JC, man, what's the weather like out there? Is it going to be nice for Grey Cup?
I suspect it will be gray and rainy as it always is this time of year out in my neck of the woods. But there
won't be any snow.
There won't be any snow. I can almost guarantee
Bring
that.
Some positivity.
What? No snow? That's positivity? What else do you want from me?
I guess that's fair.
You're going to have to bring a rain jacket, Dunk.
Jean, is it snowing in Winnipeg already?
No, it's beautiful right now. Like, the mornings are a little chilly, but it's like, you know, we've had as low as zero. Today was like 6-7 degrees, but the highs are still like a solid 15, 16. So it's my favorite time of year weather-wise. I'm not a fan of, like, the heat. I don't mind freezing temperatures. I don't like the minus 20s, minus 30s. So this is my favorite time of year. The sunshine is beautiful. The leaves are turning. I appreciate that Winnipeg is not the most beautiful city in Canada. Mind you, we're not paying $3 million for mediocre condos downtown where it never shines the sun and it's just raining all the time. But whatever, people do that and then they feel like they're better than everybody else in this country, but I digress. But fall in Manitoba is quite beautiful, especially if you're an outdoorsy person, want to do some fishing, want to do some hiking. I'm not particularly outdoorsy, I'm more indoorsy, but I do like Manitoba this time of year for sure.
Yeah, those are some harsh critiques, Hodge. I'm gonna have to maybe wander down to the ocean and stare out at the beautiful sea and all the islands across the water and really, really think about how those words hurt me. Take some
sure.
Time.
And when you fight through the 5 hours of traffic to get to the coast, you can give me a call.
Hey, I just have to walk out my
door. No, it doesn't take that long.
There's 100 steps I could get to the water.
Well, and that's good for you, but that is also a pet peeve of mine. People being like, well, I live in Vancouver, so I'm better than you. And it's like, okay, where is your actual house? And it's like, well, I'm 20 minutes west or 20 minutes east of Surrey. But that's beside the point. I live in Vancouver. And it's like, no, you don't. I can get to Vancouver as quickly as you can. I just need to get on an airplane. You're the one who's sitting in traffic waiting through seas of people. Anyway.
I don't think the traffic's that bad. JC, it's would you have to bad, pause bad. Going down those 100 steps at any point?
Going down them, I can tuck and roll. Going back up, that's the problem.
Yeah, JC's actually lived on a hut down by the beach for the last few days, and it's not because of homelessness, it's because he physically can't get back.
Oh, boys, the Elks and Stampeders can't physically play in the playoffs this postseason. We'll talk about it on this episode.
We'll also talk about the Ottawa Redblacks clinching a playoff spot for the first time since 2018.
Deontay Williams being suspended one game by the CFL.
A rare Canadian Football League trade deadline deal? Kind of, sort of.
Pandemonium in Ottawa.
And Shamar Bridges announcing he's out for the rest of the year. But first,
the BC Lions and Saskatchewan Roughriders both clinched playoff spots in Week 18 following wins over Calgary and Edmonton, respectively. The Leos and Riders meet in Regina on Saturday, with the winner likely hosting this year's West semifinal. Which team do you view as the favorite, BC or Saskatchewan?
Look, I have developed something of a reputation as a Rider hater for some reason. People out there in Regina, while they're piling on their winter coats, just can't stand my takes. But
No, not yet. Ain't going to be no snow out there on Saturday, okay? Vancouver soft boy.
Hey, I would still need a winter coat, but I am firmly with Saskatchewan in this one. I think the BC Lions are just not a good enough team right now to overcome the Riders. And you'll say, well, JC, they had a compelling win against the Calgary Stampeders last week. Surely they've turned it around. But let's examine that a little closer, boys, because offensively, this is the third straight week where they haven't had a passing touchdown. It looks painful to watch at times, and they didn't find the end zone at all, period, as an offense. Those problems are still very real. And then defensively, yes, it very much helps when you're going up against an inept Stampeders team, but they needed four real takeaways with significant returns, two touchdowns to get it done against those woeful Stampeders. And if you really look at those turnovers, yes, they were great plays, but there was an element of luck to each of those that is hard to replicate every time, right? Fumbles going right into the arms of a waiting guy that allows a 50-yard return. Deflections where they're able to get interceptions. Matthew Betts told me in the locker room after, on his 70-yard interception return for a touchdown, boys, he didn't read that as a screen pass. That wasn't some galaxy brain play where he saw the running back slip out and he was in the right spot. He was like, basically, I just messed up. I got lazy in my rush. I went to the wrong spot, and the ball hit me in the face. He had no idea that play was coming, and he just took off with it. What happened? And then, you know, obviously the TJ Lee fumble recovery, very impressive play by him, but that's a bang, bang play. I think there's some people in Calgary who still probably think that that wasn't a lateral, that it was a parallel pass from Jake Mayer. So you get a little bit lucky on each of those four takeaways and you're able to capitalize, but that's not sustainable if your offense is not clicking. And right now that's the situation for the BC Lions.
I'm going to jump in here super quick, Dunk. JC, I have to bring this up because I noticed this on social media. Your headline for this post gamer you wrote, BC Calgary, was BC Lions prove it's better to be lucky, make good on takeaways, and win over Stampeders. The following day, BC Lions defensive coordinator, Ryan Phillips, tweeted, and I quote, "It's a shame how defense is making plays and executing game plans gets hated on. The goal and mindset is to win by any means, but I'll be frank to hear people with lack of knowledge and little if none coaching experience talk about luck when it comes to making plays is utterly dumb." And I say dumb because it was all capital. So I'm not saying this was in reference to your article, but I think we could maybe infer that it was. What would your response be to Mr. Phillips?
Well, look, I didn't see Mr. Phillips' comments until just now. I think he's a tremendous defensive coordinator. And I don't think it's improper to say that you've got to be lucky sometimes to be good. I pointed out that each of those plays had an element of immense skill to it, right? The blitz by TJ Lee, perfectly timed. He reads that concept in a way that few other players can. I thought the first fumble was the most impressive. Ronald Kent Jr. coming in there, reading a little bubble screen and ripping that ball out. I know a lot of people thought it was Jalen Edwards-Cooper who came in late with the hit that popped it out. It was all Kent. He ripped that thing out like he was pulling and starting a lawnmower. Those are all great things. And I love that the defense was making plays, but you're not going to have a bunch of four turnover games, and you're not going to have guys loop into positions where they get the ball smacking them in the face every week. I don't think it's unfair to say that that's not sustainable. As good as as much better as the defense played this week than they have in the past. As for a lack of coaching experience, I've been coaching, obviously, at a much lower level than Mr. Phillips for, well, basically since I was 14 years old. So it's been well over a decade now. And, you know, my teams definitely could not compete with his. But I've been around the game for a long, long time, seen a few things. And when I have people in the locker room telling me, hey, that was just luck, I don't think it's unfair to point out that it was a lucky play.
My first question to Ryan Phillips, with all due respect, would be, did he read only the headline? Because a lot of people like to do that on Twitter. And JC, your post-game analysis columns go above and beyond in terms of everything that happened in the game from an in-depth perspective. And when you have Matthew Betts telling you that essentially it was a lucky play on his pick six from the man himself, then I think you're entitled to put that in the headline. Are you saying that everything that BC did on defense was luck? No. But what I would like in this instance, and it reminds me of a number of situations in my past, is if indeed Ryan Phillips is directing this towards our colleague JC, get in touch with him, have a conversation. It's so simple to do. And in a lot of ways, it would alleviate a lot of misconceptions, because JC is not out here saying that the BC Lions defense didn't make any plays or didn't deserve to score touchdowns on those plays. He's just saying that perhaps in some instances, there was some luck. So in the future, if Phillips is directing this at JC, and it seems to me like he is, then that's what I would encourage him. Just have a conversation. Everybody can be put at ease. Phillips can say his side. And I'm saying this from the standpoint that I'm hoping Phillips would be understanding to hear JC's side. And we can all move on forward, not necessarily sing kumbaya, but at least agree to disagree or have everybody's points heard. As for the game coming up at Mosaic Stadium, it's the biggest regular season game for both of these teams, because JC and Hodge, you guys have touched on this a number of times. It's usually been the last couple of years, the BC Lions having to go to Winnipeg for that West Final. But if the Lions have to go to Saskatchewan in November, where you know it's going to be colder, it's not the controlled confines of BC Place, the Lions will definitely be underdogs. And I believe that they're underdogs coming into Mosaic Stadium this weekend for Saturday's game. And rightfully so, because we don't know, I believe, JC, correct me if I'm wrong, what the identity of the BC Lions is game in, game out. Would you agree?
No clue. I have no clue who this team is right now. I think that's an entirely fair statement.
But from the Riders perspective, we know that since Trevor Harris has come back from a 6-game injured list, that he's going to play fairly well for the most part. Are there throws that he would want back? Yes, definitely. But the guy has 6 300-plus yard games in 10 starts this season. And one of those starts, he was out of the game with an injury by halftime that landed him on the 6-game injured list. You have an idea now that if the Riders commit to running the football, they can do a decent job at it. The offensive line has been great. Edwin Harrison should get some type of recognition. I know there's not an award for assistant coach of the year, but this guy has done incredible work piecing together this offensive line throughout the season and helping Trevor Reed, the left tackle, become at least a consistent player in his first year in the CFL. And you know Corey Mace's defense is going to take the football away. 41 takeaways this season for that defense. 3 more came in Edmonton, and arguably the most crucial one was at the end of the game where Amari Henderson punches the ball out from Curly Gittens Jr. and CJ Revis recovers to essentially clinch the Riders a postseason spot. You know the Riders are going to fight and be in the game for 60 minutes. Do they make mistakes at times? Yes, but so does every other football team. So I feel more comfortable knowing what I'm going to get from the Saskatchewan Roughriders week in and week out, especially with Trevor Harris at quarterback. I have doubts about what I'm going to see from the BC Lions. They looked like the best team in the CFL through the first handful of weeks, but ever since then, You don't know what you're going to get. With all due respect to Canadian quarterback Nathan Rourke, I think a full training camp to develop a rapport with the offense would have helped him, but he doesn't have that, and he's not going to make excuses either way. I'm jacked up. I'll be in Regina for this one. You can catch all the coverage from our standpoint live on 620 CKRM and at sportscage.com on YouTube. We'll have the stream going. It's Legends Night at Mosaic Stadium as well, with Darian Durant and Roy Shivers going into the Plaza of Honor. All different kinds of things going on, but the game is going to be a gooder.
Well, I said on the podcast last week, if you got plans while this game's ongoing, cancel them. I don't care how hot the date is. I don't care if it's grandma's birthday. I don't care what it is.
You never know, Hodge. Come on.
Grandma will understand. And in fact, if it is grandma's birthday, take her to the game.
I was thinking more about the hot date aspect, but I'll leave that to you.
He or she will understand, surely, with this game. Or heck, make it part of the date. Come over early. We'll make some food. We'll watch the game. If they don't want to watch this game, you shouldn't be dating them anyway. Let's be quite honest about that. Come on. So what I want is I want a good game here, right? I have been saying for weeks now that the BC Lions should have gone back to Vernon Adams Jr. And I want to be very clear that I have absolutely no doubts long-term about Nathan Rourke. Nathan Rourke is the future, but for the reasons Justin laid out, a lack of a training camp, right, a lack of time to really gain cohesion with this group. Like, you'd think after all these starts, like Nathan has made, what is it, 8 starts now since being back in Vancouver? Okay, he's made 7, looking at the numbers here. Has there been any marked improvement from this offense? I feel like through the
touchdown
air, the
Pacific
is,
game, the Lions looked really good.
I agree with that. That was also 5 starts ago. Since then, this offense has largely been mediocre. They put up 23 points in Montreal, or pardon me, they put up 37 points in Montreal. Great performance. But then they put up 17 at home against Toronto. Ugly. They put up 29 at home against Hamilton. Decent number, but they did nothing the whole second half. And then the team put up 32 against Calgary, but we know that the defense put up both touchdowns. So like this offense has not been impressive at all. This team lives and dies by that like intermediate 15 to 20 yard pass. And I think that that creates a bit of a boom or bust situation, right? When you run the ball really well, I think of it as elevating your floor as an offense. Your ugliest game when you run the ball well isn't ever going to be that ugly, because running the ball is a low risk way of pushing the ball down the field. This team has run the ball better, obviously, this season with William Standback in the backfield, but they could not run the ball at all against Calgary. He averaged less than 4 yards per carry in this one, and his yard per carry average against Toronto, again, was 3.5 yards. Those are 2 of his worst games of the year. So I'm not sold on this BC Lions team. I still think that in hindsight, Vernon Adams Jr. would have been the better option. And I'm not even saying that with 2020 hindsight, because I was saying it at the time, right? Nathan Rourke is the future. Vernon Adams Jr. could have been the right now. And of course, you could always have pivoted again back to Nathan Rourke for the playoffs if VA didn't work out during the regular season. But for that reason, anyways, I'm on the Riders this week. I think the Riders are going to win this. I think the Riders are going to host the West semifinal. I'm not sold on this offensive line that's been super banged up, in full fairness to the Riders. However, their receivers were making unbelievable catches this past
game. Keyshawn Johnson, my God.
Keyshawn Johnson.
Dunking on people. Woo!
Kean Schaefer Baker, like the catch radius, especially for those two, is off the charts. And then defensively, you're absolutely right, Dunk. This group can rally to the ball. We're going to talk about Roland Milligan Jr. a little bit later in the show. But when you can get pressure with 4, when you can cause turnovers, that is winning football. And I also think that if Saskatchewan can host that West semifinal, they should be pretty heavy favorites to win it. Because as we've talked about with JC being an ultra soft, pampered West Coast guy, we know that coming to play on the prairies come November is really tough. And if you're the BC Lions and you make it to the Grey Cup at home, you're loving it. But if you have to go through Regina and Winnipeg to get there, that's going to be a tall order.
I'm really glad that you brought up those catches by the Riders receivers. A, because we get to talk about them a little bit. They were fantastic. Some of the best that I've seen, and just one right after the other in that football game. Tremendous. But they also sparked a reminder for me in terms of the Lions and their struggling offense. When was the last time we saw a BC Lions receiver make a play like that? Right?
It's been a long time.
I know that we focus on Nathan and him not legging it up, but a lot of the problems with this offense are with the pieces around him. And I like some of the Lions receivers, but right now they are one-dimensional in the things that they do. They can't do the other things if asked by offensive coordinator Jordan Maksimek. And when there's a 50-50 ball thrown their way, it is a legitimate 50-50 ball. When Nathan was here in 2022, when he threw a 50-50 ball, it was a 90-10 ball. He'd put it where only his receiver could get it, and Dominic Rhymes would head top someone. Brian Burnham would make the catch of the century. Lucky Whitehead would outrun everybody. That is not what has happened this year in BC. They ate early with a few fantastic performances. Defenses adjusted. They have not been able to separate. And when they get a ball thrown in their area that's slightly contested, they don't come up with it enough. And that is part of the reason why this offense, which moves the ball well at times, crashes and burns consistently. Because they get in a second and long scenario, and there's a play that a receiver could make, or that they need somebody to get open on, and they just don't, and the ball can't get there. And that is the problem with this offense right now. It's not going to get any easier, as you said, in Mosaic Stadium. And it should be pointed out, I think Rider Nation is a little bit fired up for this matchup. Because after that last Lions win, everyone was being asked whether they would be rooting for the Riders. Because if the Riders won, as they did, it would clinch BC a playoff spot. And Nathan's quote was, "I don't think I would ever want to root for the Riders, to be honest." And somehow that got people in Saskatchewan upset, as if an opposing quarterback should be rooting for the team. I saw a lot of comments directed at Nathan that were none too kind for him saying that, which seemed like an obvious quote to me. For the record, Saskatchewan is the team that Nathan Rourke suffered his Liz Frank injury against, so perhaps there's a little bit of bad blood on his part there as well, but it's certainly not going to be a friendly rekindling when he heads to Mosaic.
JC out here disrespecting the CFL receiving yards leader, Justin McInnes. Hey, saying he's not coming up with contested catches. Really?
Justin McInnes has what, like 1,200 yards?
1,244 yards and 7 touchdowns on 79 catches, bro. He's balling.
He had 800 after 6 weeks. It's really, really easy to be on a 1,000-yard pace when you were on a 2,000-yard pace to start. Right?
Yeah, that's just the reality. Justin McInnes in week 6, 14 catches for 243 yards and a touchdown against Saskatchewan. Since then, he has not hit 100. He came close in week 15 against Toronto, 95. But other than that, he has been held pretty quiet. Still an excellent season. Still arguably, a most outstanding Canadian candidate. Unfortunately for him, I don't think he's going to get out of the West with Brady Oliveira there. But I get what you're saying. And for the record, I agree with JC wholeheartedly. This unit, this receiving core, has not done Nathan Rourke any favors. Aiden Eberhardt has not consistently enough caught the ball. For my money, they missed Javon Katoy when he's out as that physical presence. Mm-hmm. And Keon Hatcher, I think, yes. And I think Keon Hatcher, you give him a benefit of the doubt because he's coming off an Achilles. That is a tough injury. But Keon Hatcher was a top three receiver in the CFL last year. Right now, he is, I'm not going to say an afterthought, but he looks like just a regular player out there. And that is not something I'm accustomed to seeing Keon Hatcher look like, because he, when at his best, is as good as they come in this league.
You didn't even mention frying pan hands, Alexander Hollins, who leads the CFL in drop passes.
Well, he's hurt right now. He's missed the last two games. And Hollins, in credit to him, after I called him frying pan hands, stopped dropping as many passes. But that is also, according to PFF, a legitimate fact. He has dropped more passes than any player in the CFL this season. Thus, frying pan hands.
I just want to say real quick, guys, because I feel like some of these plays we don't talk enough about. That Keyshawn Johnson catch was outstanding, unbelievable, from a guy who, before taxes, earned over $2 million in the NFL, came up to the CFL, gave it its respect, went hard in training camp, earned the trust from Trevor Harris and Shea Patterson and the other quarterbacks there, Jack Cohn, in Saskatchewan. And it's paying dividends down the stretch. The receiving group for the Riders has playmakers in it, and they're able to disperse the football. You saw Sam Emilis go down the seam 88 yards, show off that speed. I think he went over 36 kilometers per hour, if Genius Sports is to be believed, on that touchdown. And then you got guys, as you mentioned, Kean Schaefer-Baker making catches, Keyshawn Johnson doing his thing, Jarrett Stearns coming into the lineup for Sean Bain Jr. and looking like he hasn't missed a beat. And if they can get Mitch Picton back in there and some of their Canadian depth gets boosted from that, this is an interesting group. And you look at the running back position, A.J. Ouellette could be 1 week away from being healthy. There's potential for him to come back for this game against BC, but everybody in Rider Nation is focused on Reichwell Armstead. They want to see him be the starting running back. So lots of options there. Full credit to the Riders for riding through that seven-game winless stretch that they were competitive in five of those football games, and the other one was a tie, to get to this point, because it easily could have followed seasons past. And yes, I know that was Craig Dickinson, where they flopped after Labor Day and didn't make the playoffs. But this is a different team, new regime under Corey Mann.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
Medical Mutual wants to remind you it's almost time for Medicare's annual enrollment period. As a trusted health insurer for more than 90 years, Medical Mutual is here to help you find better Medicare benefits. Be confident you're getting the most from your Medicare Advantage plan. Schedule your free Medicare plan review today at medmutual.com/review. Medical Mutual, Ohio's hometown Medicare insurer.
Bernie Marino is looking out for himself, not us. Marino is totally out of touch, and his company has a history of discriminating against its own workers. Marino has even faced multiple lawsuits for racial discrimination. One black man sued for being told, "You black men out there tried to hide your criminal records," and being passed over for less qualified white applicants. Moreno has shown his colors. If he's elected senator, he's liable to rubber stamp Trump's radical Project 2025 agenda 100% and turn back the clock for Ohio. From taking away our overtime pay to gutting our public schools and rolling back our civil rights, we can't let Moreno take us backwards. We can count on Sherrod Brown to continue doing what's right to protect Ohio's workers and families. Vote and re-elect Sherrod Brown.
Paid for by Ask Me People, AskMePeople.org, which is responsible for the content of this ad. Not authorized by any candidate or candidate's committee.
The Edmonton Elks and Calgary Stampeders were both eliminated from playoff contention in Week 18, marking the first time since the 1940s that no team from Alberta will make the CFL playoffs. With these teams having nothing to play for the rest of this year, which one is currently in a better position to bounce back next year?
Ask me this question after free agency has happened, because by that time, we will know who are the respective head coaches and general managers for the Elks and Stampeders, respectively, moving forward, and the quarterbacks, because that's going to tell us a lot about the future. Jake Mayer, Trey Ford, McLeod Bethel-Thompson, all pending free agents on expiring contracts. The hot seat has clearly been turned up in some form or fashion, being felt by Craig Dickinson, excuse me, his brother, Dave Dickinson, in Calgary, especially when he gets asked about it and says, I'm bleeping here to work. It seems like he's starting to feel that. And you have a new owner in Larry Thompson in Edmonton with a regime that, whether they like it or not, are Chris Jones' people. So to be quite honest, if I'm Larry Thompson, I want my people in there. So I'm going to have to go through, I would hope he does this or his people do this, an intensive interview process with these people to decide if they're going to be there. I think G. Roy Simon shouldn't be cast as much of a Chris Jones guy, but Jarius Jackson and the rest of that coaching staff, Chris Jones guys, do you really want them there? And can you even repair the relationship with Trey Ford, who, to his credit, has towed the company line, has dealt with this in the lineup, out of the lineup situation, and hasn't said anything publicly. And the guy has more wins at the quarterback position for the Edmonton Elks through the whole time Chris Jones and his people have been there, yet they don't want to stick with him, develop him, and most importantly, construct the offense around him. I don't think that's been talked about enough. Perhaps there were some tweaks, but by and large part, based on the people I've talked to, when Trey Ford has started games or when he's come into games, it's a similar offense to what McLeod Bethel-Thompson gets. And that shouldn't be the case. So I need to see what moves these franchises make before I can answer that question.
I can answer the question right now, and the answer is the Edmonton Elks. And it's for the reason you just mentioned, Justin. The Edmonton Elks have a deep-pocketed owner that is highly active and motivated for his team. I'm not sure the same is true in Calgary, where CSEC has, for the better part of a decade at this point, I think largely rested on their laurels as, hey, look, our team is good. People will come to the worst venue in the league and cheer for them. And we don't have to invest anything above or beyond that. In Edmonton, there is obviously still work to be done. I agree with you. G. Roy Simon should not be cast as a Chris Jones guy. I also think that with the roster tweaks that he's made, G. Roy should be right up there with anybody else to be the next GM of this team. The coaching staff, I thought Jarius Jackson had a little bit of an embarrassing moment this past game when he tried to challenge something that shouldn't be challengeable. In your first game as an interim head coach, that's perfectly understandable. He's now been the interim head coach for more than half the season. That is not something that should be happening this late in the year. That being said, that offense has moved the ball consistently all year long. Steven Sorrell is a guy who the Saskatchewan Roughriders ran out of town when they were giving up sacks left, right, and center, has done amazing things, I think, as the run game coordinator for that team this year, coaching up a patchwork offensive line. Defensively, they've been let down the last few weeks. They gave up, obviously, 6 touchdown passes to Zach Kolaris a couple weeks ago. The Riders had that had their way with that defense for much of this past week's game at Commonwealth Stadium. But regardless of who is at the top of this organization, from a personnel standpoint, I have more faith in the ownership group of the Edmonton Elks. They are supposedly unveiling their new president in very short order. And at the end of the day, good ownership wins, right? Mm-hmm. I think these two teams are both going to be in the Vernon Adams Jr. sweepstakes this offseason. And if I'm Vernon Adams Jr., I'm going to the place where I feel like I am more taken care of. And that's probably true off the field as much as it is on the field. And I think Edmonton is in a better position to potentially woo him there, regardless of who the coaching staff is. So for that reason, I am taking the Edmonton Elks.
Well, I mean, nobody has to woo Vernon Adams Jr. They have to woo Neil McAvoy and Rick Campbell with how much they're willing to pay for him. Vernon Adams Jr. is under contract. He needs to be traded, not released at this point, right?
True, but part of getting buy-in from a marquee player is also courting them, right? You're not trading for a guy without talking to him and saying, hey, if you came here, this is what it would look like. Like, if you're trading for a rookie, I think it's different. If you're trading for an established player, you have to build that relationship. But yes, you are correct and in noting that he is not a true free agent.
I actually think it's going to be the Calgary Stampeders who have a leg up in landing Vernon Adams Jr. because I think they are less settled at their quarterback position. I know there's lots of question marks still in Edmonton, but they're going to have to decide whether they believe that Trey Ford is a guy, whether he even wants to come back. And McLeod Bethel-Thompson, if he wanted to come back and you decided not to stick with Trey Ford, has done plenty in my mind to earn another contract if he wanted to play another year. And obviously we don't know what's going on with him on a personal front. But on that same note, Hodge, you want to talk about embarrassing with Jarius Jackson challenging something that can't be challenged. MBT once again running his mouth post-game, not knowing the rules of the league that he's played in for the majority of his adult life. Those are the types of things that you just can't have, that just feed into a losing culture in Edmonton. Calling out the referees for a call late in the game, the incompletion to Javon Leake, saying it's ridiculous that it was reviewed because it wasn't a scoring play. Newsflash, MBT, since your second year in the league, 2018, all potential scoring plays have been automatically reviewed as well. Every single start of your career has been played under those rules. And when you don't know that and you run your mouth, it just looks like you're a sore loser, like it's sour grapes, and that you are blaming other factors instead of the mistakes that your team made to lose that football game. And they were big mistakes that were made at times in that ball game that ultimately cost them in a one-score football game against the Riders. So I think that Edmonton is more unsettled in a lot of ways. I think Calgary has more structural issues. And frankly, I'm not sure if either of these teams are going to make the playoffs again in 2025.
When we talk about quarterbacks in the offseason, fellas, I want to be ahead of the curve and make sure Three Down Nation is, which we usually are. There's this possibility out there. Davis Alexander is a pending free agent. Cody Fajardo has a contract through 2025, but we've seen and heard Jason Moss's affinity for Davis Alexander, and Cody Fajardo admitted before the Alouettes won the Grey Cup at the end of the 2023 season that he had contemplated retiring from professional football before even signing with Montreal. I'm not saying that we should be talking about Cody Fajardo potentially retiring, but the Alouettes, who have been far and away the best team in the CFL this season, the standings would say it. And yes, I know the Bombers are on an 8-game winning streak, so they've been really good too, but the Owls are higher in the standings. Danny Maciocia and Jason Moss have a major decision to make at the quarterback position unless they're going to say to Davis Alexander, sign a contract that steps him up to potentially be the heir apparent in 2026 when Cody Fajardo's contract is already over. There's different ways you can go about it if you're Danny Maciocia, but if you're Davis Alexander, you're saying, I want to play now. I want to earn that starting quarterback money now. So that is something to at least keep an eye on as the rest of the season and the offseason goes along.
Well, and I think another interesting domino is Hamilton, right? Trey Ford is essentially from Hamilton. He played at Waterloo. We know he looks good in black and yellow. And yes, Ty Cats fans, I know you guys call it gold. That does not change the fact that it is yellow. So I'm calling it yellow. Before the season, I remember thinking, wow, Trey Ford, pending free agent. We know Bob Young, the owner there, likes shiny new toys, right? He brought in KC Printers. He brought in Andy Fantuz. He brought in Bo Levi Mitchell, right? We know that they love making these splashes. Wouldn't it be something if they got in the hometown kid, Trey Ford? And what if they even made a splash play for his brother, Tyrell? I'm not suggesting that is going to happen. It's just something that I have pondered. Well, all of a sudden, you've got Bo Levi Mitchell under contract for next year at a sweetheart figure playing, though he had a poor performance this past week, at an arguable MOP level. So I'm interested to see what the Hamilton Tiger Cats look to do this upcoming season. Is there a possibility? And I have not heard this. I'm totally speculating right now. But what if there was a situation where a team traded for Bo Levi Mitchell after the Hamilton Tiger Cats brought in Trey Ford? What if that team was the Calgary Stampeders trading for Bo Levi Mitchell?
No.
Because if you miss out on Vernon Adams Jr., why wouldn't you do that if you're the Calgary Stampeders? You're going to have to pay McLeod Bethel-Thompson like $500,000 in free agency. Bo's under contract next year. There's some play time, but I think the hard money is like $250,000. You're not going to find a quarterback that good for that little money. I'm just saying, what a world that would be.
That would be such a Stampeders move to living in the past constantly.
That ain't happening, Hodge. Come on, bro.
Crazy. Look, you're going to tell me that nothing crazier has happened in the CFL? Come on.
I'm not saying it hasn't, but I can't see that happening.
I would not be shocked if the Ticats made a splash. And then just like they did when they brought in Bo Levi Mitchell, when Dane Evans was under contract already, going, okay, what do we do now? Because that team has ADHD. Every 2 years, they rip it to the studs. And that just seems to be what they do.
In fairness, the thing that you're forgetting maybe in the equation of that move, Hodge, is Taylor Powell, who Scott Milanovic was so high on that he benched Bo Levi Mitchell earlier in the season to insert Taylor Powell, who's now in his second year, hasn't played much this season, obviously, because he got injured in that first start. But if you've got a guy you think that highly of, I don't foresee you bringing in a third quarterback into that mix.
Well, and he's under a sweetheart contract for 2025. And I think Dunk is smart to mention Davis Alexander as a big pending free agent. I think at this point, you know, Jeremiah Masoli, I'm not saying he's done, but probably his time as like a starter or borderline starter is over, especially after what was frankly a very poor performance before Ottawa's recent bye week. Cameron Dukes, maybe before the first half of the season, was viewed as the next guy somewhere. I don't think he was terrible for the Argonauts, but I don't think anybody's looking at him going, wow, that is our future right there. We got to go get this guy in free agency. Chris Streveler is Chris Streveler. He's not a starter. He is a unique weapon, I would call him, but he's not the future anywhere for anybody. You know, Shea Patterson, I think, is probably a career backup. I'm not saying he's a bad player. I don't think he's a franchise guy anywhere. You know, he's maybe like a Matthew Schultz type. I don't think Jake Mayer is a day one starter in the CFL in 2025. So going across the country, there's not a huge list of guys. It's basically, you know, we'll see what happens in some of the places with two quarterbacks, but I think Davis Alexander will be highly sought after. Trey Ford could be highly sought after, and we'll see where some of these young guns end up.
This October, Tanger invites you to shop pink and save lives. Your donation of $10 or more to the Breast Cancer Research Foundation helps fuel innovative research that brings us closer to a cure. It also unlocks exclusive savings from brands like Coach, Crocs, Columbia Factory Store, and more to shop all month long. Join us as we mark 30 years of advancing research and empowering hope. Donate and access your exclusive savings today at Tanger.com.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Question for you. Would you rather pay $150 a month or $15 a month to work out with the same high-quality gym equipment? At Planet Fitness, you can get top-tier equipment for $15 a month. Plus, save $28 or more when you join now during our Strong Choice Sale. Our weights weigh the same, you just don't pay the same. Enjoy free fitness training and 24-hour access at most clubs, all in the judgment-free zone. Join Planet Fitness today and save $28 or more when you join for $1 down, $15 a month, cancel anytime. Deal ends October 10th. See club for details.
The Winnipeg Blue Bombers need one win or one Saskatchewan loss to clinch first place in the West Division for a fourth straight season. Assuming the Bombers do just that, is it a foregone conclusion that Winnipeg wins the West Final again, Hodge?
Foregone conclusion, no, of course not. It's possible for a team to come in and win. Their margin for error, I think, is just incredibly low. Let's call a spade a spade. Winnipeg has not played well the last three West Finals, like at all. I've covered them all, including the one where I froze my ever-loving butt off.
There was one where they turned the ball over six times, wasn't there, and still won.
I believe that is the number. That was the 2021 West Final when the Riders were in town. I think Zach threw three, if not four, first-half interceptions. It was awful that game. But the atmosphere, the energy, the weather, it makes Princess Auto Stadium an unbelievably tough place to play at that time of year. And what it does is it gives the Bombers a huge margin of error, as we mentioned in 2021. 2022, they hosted the BC Lions when Nathan Rourke was playing on one leg. In 2023, they hosted the BC Lions when Keon Hatcher went down early, TJ Lee went down early, and Vernon Adams Jr. tweaked his knee partway through that game. And those types of things, obviously some of them are fluky, right, with the injuries, but this team runs the ball better than anybody else in the CFL. They had a slow start to the year. That run game has been unstoppable for the last while. They, I thought, embarrassed, frankly, the Hamilton Tiger Cats along the line of scrimmage this past week. And that defensive line in Hamilton is no joke. Defensively, they've been the best defense in the league for the last 12 weeks. They're starting to get those takeaways that were missing at the start of the season. And what that does is it gives Zach Collaros this fantastic role where it's like, hey, don't throw any picks, maybe throw it up to Kenny Lawler once or twice. But as long as you don't make mistakes, we'll win this game. Now, he made two, and I used the word lucky in my column as well, by the way, JC. You weren't the only one this past week. Because Destin Talbert got a gift from Zach Collaros that he put on the turf, and Jonathan Moxie had a pick in his hands on the first drive of the game for the Ticats, or first defensive drive of the game for the Ticats, dropped it. And also Tim White dropped what should have been an easy touchdown for the Ticats. So if those three
can
plays,
I jump in there real quick about Tim White?
Go ahead.
Sorry, because I was at my nephew's hockey on Saturday, and noted Ticats fan Adam, I will leave his last name out, was the head coach of his hockey team. And he did a great job, by the way. Had the kids all bought in, checked on their names, what position they wanted to try out, all the rest. Great guy. And we go back in there after the game's over, and Adam goes, and you, sir, he points at me, cover my favorite football league. And I'm going, I don't really want to talk football in here, man. It's about the kids and all that stuff. And he goes, that Tim White, he dropped another touchdown pass that cost us another game. He wanted all that money last offseason. I want him cut. Tim White got no more time for you. This is coming from a Ticats season tickets holder who was that upset about Tim White's drops over the season and the fact that he wanted all that money last offseason, fellas. You guys remember it well, that he had to mention it amongst a bunch of kids in the dressing room after the game. So sorry, that just jumped to mind for me. Shout out to Adam for following and checking out our stuff on 3downnation.com. Excellent coach, by the way. Really like the way that he's going about it with my nephew's hockey team.
Well, and I don't want to open this debate again because it's fraught at this point, but we get so much hate from certain subgroups in football about how running backs don't matter and they're irrelevant. Well, a lot of the money that used to go to running backs now goes to receivers, and you've got Alexander Hollins leading the league in drops. You've got Eugene Lewis having balls go off his knee into the waiting arms of Adam O'Clair. You've got Tim White dropping easy touchdowns. You've got Kenny Lawler and Dalton Schoen, who have missed a ton of time due to injury this season. Like, maybe paying receivers gobs and gobs of money when they're only going to touch the ball, even in a good game, like eight times, is silly when you can pay a difference maker in the backfield who's going to touch it 24 times like Brady Oliveira did in Steeltown and go for like 160 yards from scrimmage.
But or an elite left tackle or pass rusher, but I feel you.
Or any other, yes, but I'm just saying, I don't know why running backs get this horrible reputation when you got highly paid receivers turning the ball over and dropping it and doing all these
things. Stay quiet, JC, stay quiet.
But regardless,
not engaging.
Getting back to the question at hand, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers can be beat in the West Final, but it is not going to be a fair fight. It is going to be unbelievably slanted in their favor. And I know Rider fans are saying, yeah, because the refs are all on the bottom. No. And the command center, by the way, you notice how every single review in that Riders Edmonton game went Saskatchewan's way? Yeah. And guess what? They're all right calls. I'm not trying to suggest that the command center is biased one way or another. I just want to stop hearing Rider fans talk about how the command center is the worst thing ever and they never get any calls because they got every call correctly. Correctly, but they got every call this past week. So let's bury that narrative. But I think every advantage on the field goes Winnipeg's way in those big playoff games. If you're coming to the Princess Auto Stadium for the West Final this year, whether you're Saskatchewan, whether you're BC, whatever, you have to be close to perfect. If you are, you can win. If not, you are not going to the Grey Cup.
There is no tougher place to play in the CFL right now than Princess Auto Stadium, and that gives any team that has to head in there, in the playoffs in particular, a massive disadvantage. Now, I do think that both of these teams that they could face in that game, Saskatchewan and BC, have elements to them that lend themselves to the playoffs. I think Saskatchewan can be a rugged, hard-nosed team. We talked about Edwin Harrison earlier and what that offensive line has done, what they've done with Reichwell Armstead at running back. If A.J. Ouellette is back and healthy, we all know what he can do. He hasn't done it this year, but can he be that playoff push type of guy? I think that is an element that could help the Riders if they end up in that situation. I think they are on much better footing to pull off that upset. And then for the BC Lions, as much as we have harped on them, and I think deservedly so, and I don't think that they will be the team reaching this game. But if they were, the one thing that has gone better for the Lions this season, or I should say two things that have gone better for the Lions this season, are the two things that they adjusted to in response to their back-to-back losses in the West Final. And that is, A, their ability to stop the run up front by getting a little bit beefier on the interior, which they've done a fairly solid job at thus far this season, although I don't think they've truly been tested. And B, and more importantly, their ability to run the football when they need to. And they've done an excellent job of that with William Stanback, who is having a fantastic season. And even though you noted, Hodge, earlier that his numbers weren't as good this last week against Calgary, and that's fair to point out, when they did need a carry at the end of the game to ice things, he got them an 11-yard first down, right? When the chips have been on the table, William Stanback has delivered almost every single time this season, and that's a massive improvement from what they had last year with Tyquan Mizell, where they simply weren't getting those yards when they needed to, and they couldn't run the ball at all in a tough playoff game. If you get into a defensive battle with Winnipeg, we know that Brady Oliveira is going to do what he's going to do, but I think William Stanback can actually, maybe not match him, but get awfully close, and that gives BC a better shot than maybe they've had in the past to pull the upset, even though I still think Winnipeg has a massive advantage over both teams.
I don't think it's a foregone conclusion that the Bombers win the West Final, even if it's at home, but there's no doubt Winnipeg will be the decided favorite in the game. I feel like you guys laid it out well. I just want to note in the Banjo Bowl, that game was tight, 26-21. Trevor Harris threw two critical interceptions. So, Hodge, I think your point is well taken. If you go in there, you absolutely have to win the turnover battle. But as history would show in 2021, that's why I wanted to reference it, the Riders won the turnover battle by a pretty marked margin and still weren't able to win. You don't have to play perfect, but you have to play high-quality football. And at the end of the day, fellas, as much as I hate cliches, there's a reason they play the games. I think it's going to be an exciting run-up to the West Final, the East Final, and ultimately the Grey Cup.
I will also give the Riders credit for this. They have done a better job than any other team corralling Brady Oliveira this year.
The Riders have the best run defense in the league.
They allowed less than 50 yards each time they played him. Now, they got burned by him through the air a little bit with a bunch of checkdowns. Between the three games combined, he's well over 150 yards as a receiver. And also Trevor Harris, I think, has fared better than any other quarterback against Winnipeg's defense this season, though ironically, he's 0-2 against them as a starter. Shea Patterson, 1-0. So I think there are some elements that match up well for Saskatchewan. But again, playoffs are different. I will also note BC came into Princess Auto Stadium back in August, and Winnipeg shut him out, right? And that was the first. That wasn't the first Nathan Rourke game. That was the last Vernon Adams Jr. game. Then Winnipeg went and beat Nathan Rourke and company later on. So maybe the BC Lions are an easier matchup for Winnipeg. I'm not sure. We'll have to wait and see. The Ottawa Redblacks clinched a playoff berth in Week 18, despite being on a bye thanks to Winnipeg's win over Hamilton. The team is on a three-game losing streak and are without a number of key players due to injury, including left tackle Dino Boyd, defensive end Bryce Carter, linebackers Adarius Pickett and Javon Santos Knox, cornerback Brandon Dandridge, and safety Alonzo Adai, and of course, franchise quarterback Drew Brown. That is a long list. Though we'll get a better read on these injuries when the team starts to practice this week, do fans in our nation have a reason for optimism heading into the playoffs?
Your reason for optimism? Is you got a ticket to the dance, right? For the first time in a long time, you're going to get a shot at the playoffs, and we all know anything can happen there. But unless a bunch of bodies are coming back this week, and we'll know that a little bit later on when we see who's practicing after this bye, there are some real causes for concern in Ottawa. They are missing key pieces. I don't think they are missing pieces that are easy to replace. Right, there is no other Adarius Pickett, and he's not walking through that door again. He's out for the year, and that is as devastating a blow to a defense as you can have in the CFL. He is one of one at the strong side linebacker position, and I think their performances since he's been out indicate just how much he was the heartbeat of that unit. But also, on the other side of the ball, not only was Drew Brown injured, but the last two games before he sat out were terrible. And when Jeremiah Mazzoli stepped in, he also struggled badly. Nothing is going right for this football team right now. And unless they get a huge injection of talent by way of guys returning from injury, I think it's only going to get worse going down the stretch.
If Drew Brown is at quarterback, I believe that the Red Blacks could make some noise, but the loss of Adarius Pickett is absolutely massive for a number of reasons. We know the playmaker he is on defense, but as a leader and the energy and the swag that he brought, not just to that unit, but the entire team, are being missed because he's not in the lineup. He can still bring that energy, but it's not the same if you're not putting the pads on and going out there between the white lines with your teammates. I do believe that the Red Blacks can get this turned around because they are on this losing streak, but Drew Brown has to be at quarterback. To me, he's a real difference maker. And I think what's been hurting him a little bit is a lack of a run game, especially since Rykel Armstead has been released and the Red Blacks aren't willing to go into specifics as to why Armstead was released. It seems like some of the extracurricular activity there is the reason, but the Red Blacks have been lacking that punch at running back. And I think that's hurting Drew Brown and the offense at this point. And there's just no replacing Adarius Pickett. But I do think that if Drew Brown is a quarterback, the Red Blacks could have a chance to make some noise.
Yeah, I think we need to start out by saying kudos to the Red Blacks for getting in. Obviously, they kind of limped in. They didn't even get in on a win of their own. They've lost three straight, all by double digits. And Drew Brown, by the way, 1-3 in his last four starts. That being said, you're exactly right. You have to get in, right? And there are situations, even situations where the Red Blacks are, in fact, this team in the Canadian Football League, where going into the playoffs, zero people are picking a particular team to win the Grey Cup, and they end up going on a surprise run. I think this is a good opportunity for them this upcoming week to get a taste of the Montreal Alouettes. They got absolutely crushed by this team back in week three, losing 47-21. They had a more respectable loss to this team back in week 16, 24-12. I don't think if you're the Red Blacks, you want to get swept, though literally just last season, we did see an instance where a team got swept all season long during the regular season. And then those two teams met in the East Final and the underdog killed them, right? Montreal got swept by Toronto last regular season, went into BMO Field and killed, right, the Toronto Argonauts. So we'll have to wait and see. I'm not optimistic. I agree with you guys. Some of these players, you know, might be back. We know Adarius Pickett's not going to be one of them. He's not replaceable. All due respect to the rest of the players in that locker room. I'm not bullish on Ottawa heading into the playoffs, but crazier things have happened. And again, this is a team that a lot of people were picking to miss the playoffs again this year, or if not miss the playoffs, they were like a bubble team. Well, guess what? We still got 3 weeks of the regular season left. This team has already punched its ticket to the playoffs, and this team has a decent shot still of hosting a playoff game, of course, being half a game ahead of the Toronto Argonauts. So, you know, you feel good, I think, about being in at this point. I'm not sure if this is the year Ottawa is going to make their Grey Cup run.
Fall into big savings, all in the Kroger app. Get delicious Kroger pasta sauce or pasta for 99 cents each with your card. Then get tender, fresh Tyson boneless chicken breasts for $2.49 a pound with your card and a digital coupon. Shop these deals at your local Kroger today, or tap the screen now to download the Kroger app to save big today. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Prices and product availability subject to change. Restrictions apply. See site for details.
Canadian running back Brady Oliveira has emerged as the front runner for MOP, especially after a brilliant performance in Hamilton, while Bo Levi Mitchell struggled against Winnipeg's defense, throwing two interceptions. Dunk, is Oliveira the MOP? Are you going to make a case right now for Roland Milligan Jr.?
There is definitely a case for Roland Milligan Jr., and I'm not going to anoint Brady Oliveira the MOP, because I think that the rest of this regular season still needs to play out. And the more that I think about this, fellas, and the more data that we uncover about Roland Milligan Jr.'s impact, JC, I know you're going to want to get Tyrell Ford in here, which is totally respectable. The more that I'm starting to believe that there is some credence to the argument that Roland Milligan Jr. and even Tyrell Ford should legitimately be in this conversation. Brady Oliveira has had a great season, but it's not going to be close to the one that he had last year, when I believe he should have won the Canadian Football League's Most Outstanding Player Award. And it's not like he's far and away above the next leading rusher, which is William Stanback, who, you know, depending how much Oliveira plays down the stretch, Stanback could actually potentially pass to be the CFL's rushing champion. So let's see how that plays out. Roland Milligan Jr. still needs to go out and make critical plays, especially in this game against the BC Lions, because so much is riding on it. I think he would ideally need another signature moment. He's had a number of them, but if he made a big play, perhaps a pick six against the BC Lions, that would stand out more and more in the voters' minds. But fellas, the issue here to me is with the voters. And yes, I'm taking somewhat of a shot at the old guard, but we can't just be old, tried and true and make this either a quarterback or a running back award, especially this season. If Brady Oliveira was rushing for 2,000 yards or was putting down another 2,000-yard offensive yard season, I should say, if I could speak some words, total scrimmage yard season, then yes, it's Brady Oliveira. But voters didn't want to give it to him last season. And I go back to the Zach Kolaris argument last season. Zach Kolaris didn't have as good of a season as he had the two previous in 2021 and 2022, but yet I still felt like he was the MOP, and people felt like that was other players who had lesser stats, and I felt like a lesser impact on their teams. I'll leave that there, though. So let's just open up our ideas to other players actually having outstanding seasons, which the award is about. Roland Milligan Jr. certainly deserves to be in that conversation. Brady Oliveira as well. It's hard to see now Bo Levi Mitchell legitimately being in there because it doesn't seem like, as Hodge guaranteed a number of weeks ago, that the Ticats are going to make the playoffs. I don't think you can make much of an argument for Cody Fajardo in Montreal. Perhaps some people will say, well, Darnell Sankey and Tyrese Beverett should be in there if you're talking about Roland Milligan Jr., but it's different with Roland Milligan Jr. because of him leading the CFL with 8 interceptions, him leading the CFL in pass knockdowns, him leading the CFL in special teams tackles, his defense as a whole far and away leading the CFL in turnovers. Roland Milligan Jr. is dominating in 2 of 3 phases of Canadian football. Let's not forget that special teams is an actual phase that decides football games. Just ask Mike O'Shea and the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. That's part of the reason why they have been so good and been to 4 straight Grey Cups and potentially going to 5 straight. Roland Milligan Jr. is a legitimate MOP candidate. Let's actually open up our eyes to new possibilities.
That was a well-made, nuanced argument. And it's not going to happen. Brady Oliveira is the MOP. And I will say, I do think that you're shortchanging him a little bit. He had a great performance this past week. He is now at 1,678 yards from scrimmage this year. He's on pace to actually quite far surpass his receiving totals from last year. Now his touchdown totals are well down. He had 13 last year, only 4 so far this season, but those have all come since, of course, the Chris Streveler injury, with Streveler being this team's number one red zone weapon. He will not rush for as many yards as he did last year. He's still almost 300 yards shy of that number with only 2 games to go. And assuming the Bombers clinch first place in the West Division with a game left on the docket because they have a bye in week 20, I think it's, you know, probably safe to suggest that Brady's not going to play 2 full games. That would be a little bit silly of Mike O'Shea and company. That being said, I also don't think it's fair necessarily to say, well, Brady Oliveira didn't do better in 2024 than he did in 2023, therefore he's not the MOP. Because
I'm not saying that. I'm saying if we look at the argument that other voters used.
I have heard that argument made. Well, Brady's not as good as he was last year, therefore he can't win the award. Brady Oliveira is not competing against anybody from 2023 from this award. He's competing against every other player in the league from 2024. Now, has what Roland Milligan Jr. done more impressive than what Brady Oliveira has done? It's kind of hard to compare a DB to a running back, but I think all the tiebreakers go to Brady. For people who sympathize with the fact that Brady didn't win the award last year, they're going to vote for Brady. For people who are going to say, well, I'll vote for the better team, you vote for Brady. If for people who are going, well, I'll vote for the better story. Well, Canadian winning MOP in his hometown, I think, is a better story than Roland Milligan Jr. winning it. So I think Brady's going to win it. I think it's a valid debate as to whether or not he deserves it. But if you're going to argue that William Stanback is right there, I think you also have to make the argument that we now have multiple players who are right there with Roland Milligan Jr. for picks. Devondrick Bynum has a ton at Edmonton. Tyrell Ford has 7 in Winnipeg. So if
that's where I'm saying Roland Milligan Jr. stands out because of what he's done on special teams.
And the special teams is a good argument, but it's not like he has 12 interceptions and returned 4 of them for touchdowns, which is the type of performance he might need if he wants to win this award.
Probably.
I know the last time we had this discussion, I was on the Bo Levi Mitchell bandwagon. I've flip-flopped on that at this point because I'm back.
JC's going to vote for a running back?
No, I'm back on Roland Milligan Jr. Brady Oliveira isn't even in my equation for this award right now.
What?
I simply
that's ridiculous.
He wouldn't even be in my top three. He would not be in my top three. And I don't think
that's insane, bro.
I don't think he's the most outstanding player for the Bombers. My top three are Milligan, Mitchell, and Tyrell Ford. I do
Wait,
not
so
think
you're, way, you're like, whoa, way I'm out of way here. Off, Bully. I'm way off him. Okay, he's my second pick.
What? I didn't rank him in order. They're in
Yes, in order,
equation.
Bro.
Okay.
In order, top three candidates for MOP.
You know what? That is probably my order right now. That's probably my order right now.
Give me a break.
Okay. I think Mitchell needed a signature moment to win this award. He didn't get one, right, against the Winnipeg Blue Bombers. And if you don't get that signature moment and you still miss the playoffs, that becomes harder to make the case for Mitchell as the MOP. But Brady Oliveira, to me, I haven't forgotten his early season struggles, right? I think that's an element that needs to be remembered. He has not been as consistently good all season as Roland Milligan Jr.
has.
He's
been pretty good.
He's been good, but there were weeks at the start, right, when we were talking about, okay, what's wrong with Brady Oliveira? I know he was nicked up at the time, but it's not the same complete body of work right now as Roland Milligan Jr. And I think your case about the special teams success of Milligan is compelling to me, particularly when I compare him to Tyrell Ford, who are, I think, the top two graded DBs in the CFL, probably the two top graded defensive players in the CFL right now, neck and neck for interceptions. You know, could you make the argument Tyrell Ford's better as a DB? Perhaps, because he's a lockdown corner. But I don't
If you're
going
to go that way, JC, then I'll say, okay, Tyrell Ford plays field corner and Roland Milligan Jr. plays boundary halfback.
Yeah, and I'm not saying that's
Massive
the argument.
Massive difference.
I agree with that. But I'm saying if you're going to compare him like that, well, Roland Milligan Jr. is doing something dominant in a second phase of the game as well. So he, even if he's the number two defensive player in the country, and I'm not sure he is, he's the number one special teams player in terms of coverage as well. So to me, as a whole, that makes an MOP. I think he has been better this season than Brady has. I think Brady is still a fantastic player. I voted for him last year. I thought he should have won that award last year, but I don't think he has been as good this season. He has not been as consistent this season. And I think what we've seen from Roland Milligan Jr. has been truly special.
Hodge, you're right. It's going to be difficult for any defensive player to win the award. There's only been one true full-time defensive player to win this award. Solomon Elamimian, 2014. There's some people out there that might say Hal Patterson played defensive back. The guy had over 2,000 yards from scrimmage in that year when he won MOP, okay? Like, he was an offensive player. So I agree with you, Hodge. Brady Oliveira has been consistent since the start of the season. The Blue Bombers are never going to say what was going on there at the start of the year. Was Brady Oliveira in the shape that Michael Shea would have wanted? You know, why wasn't he getting the ball as much? You know, what was going on there? It was very weird, but they've gotten past that. Brady Oliveira has been great. There's no denying it. But if we're actually talking about the most outstanding player, I feel like consistently, as JC laid out, it has been Roland Milligan Jr. in two phases. And if he wasn't on that team, you know, dare I say that the Riders would maybe not be in a position that the playoffs were clinched now, or possibly not going for a home playoff game. It's hard to say, but Roland Milligan Jr. has had that type of impact. And I look to Corey Mace for this because he doesn't like talking about individual players very much. But when he speaks about Roland Milligan Jr., it's with reverence. There is a different level of respect for Roland Milligan Jr. I'm not saying we should cast him as the MOP because Corey May says so, but that to me speaks volumes. When your coach doesn't like talking about individual players, but when he talks about Roland Milligan Jr., it's just different.
One quick note. I was curious because, of course, the Winnipeg Blue Bombers are hosting the Toronto Argonauts on Friday night. I was curious to see how the Argonauts stacked up against the run. The Argonauts are first in opposing rushing yards per game and first in opponent average rush this season. So no dunk. Saskatchewan is not number one. They're number two in rushing yards allowed per game, tied for fourth in average rush allowed, though these stats are a week old because we're recording this on Monday morning. And for
that's
some
what I was going to say, bro, what stats you got?
Takes several days to upload new stats, which is a separate issue we'll talk about another day.
The Riders, after limiting Edmonton on the ground, will be the number one rush defense in the CFL and consistently have been the number one rush defense in the CFL.
And I will say that's a pretty remarkable stat for the Argonauts, considering how long Wynton McManus and Jared Brinkman were out earlier this season. So as good as they were during the run of the season, they're probably better now. So it'll be a good test for Brady and company on Friday when the Bombers host the Argonauts. There was a great week of U Sports football this past weekend, including the annual Panda game in Ottawa. The game that stood out most to me, aside from the Panda game, which I know JC will talk about, was the Guelph Griffins upsetting the undefeated Windsor Lancers 45-40. It should be noted that the Lancers did not have starting quarterback Danny Skelton. However, the Griffins are suddenly in great position to host a playoff game for the first time since pre-pandemic. And now that I've talked about the Guelph Griffins, nobody else has to. JC, which game stood up most to you?
Well, actually, I'm not going to go with the Panda game. I thought that was a fantastic football game. But there's two other things that I want to highlight first, because I'm sure we'll get into the Panda game a little bit later. First of all, shout out to the York Lions. Win number two on the season. 39-24 over the Waterloo Warriors. And I believe that earns them the right to have the lion on the side of their helmets, if I'm not mistaken. It was two wins. Was that not the mark that Dexter Jenke set at the start of the year? So they are fully decked out now. That team, from where they've come from to where they are now, they should be incredibly proud of themselves and the work they've done. Still a lot more to do. Still a lot higher to get. But that's impressive to me. But the game I want to highlight, when you're talking about college football in the United States, often you get into a discussion of Heisman moments. And we never really talk about that in the U Sports context. But I think Taylor Elgersma had himself a heck Crichton moment, because he's going up against number 8 Queens, a ranked team, and they blow the absolute doors off them, 51-21 for the Laurier Golden Hawks, the number one team in the country. He puts up 417 passing yards and 5 touchdowns. That is a remarkable performance against what is both traditionally and currently a very, very good Gales team. I think that all but seals the Heck Crichton trophy for Laurier's outstanding quarterback.
Taylor Elgersma, definitely legit for the Heck Crichton Trophy. And guys, I want to talk about the Guelph-Windsor game, but for reasons you might not expect. In that game, part of the reason it was so close is Windsor returned a Griffin's attempted onside kick. I believe it was Shane Johnson who picked it up on a perfect bounce and went the other way. And the other wacky special teams play that happened, Guelph blocked a field goal. The Lancers holder picked it up and scored. When have you guys ever seen a blocked field goal returned by the team who allowed the block for a touchdown?
That's high school stuff, man. That's ridiculous.
I don't know. I bet that's exactly how they drew it up.
It was crazy. Honestly, full credit to Nick Domovsky for the Lancers, who technically was their third string quarterback because Danny Skelton was out. Coming in for Corson Roy and giving the Lancers life. But those two special teams plays that happened were just something that you usually don't see, but part of the beauty, I believe, of Canadian football.
I also want to highlight the Saskatchewan Huskies knocking off the number 7 Manitoba Bisons, handing them their first loss of the season. Another unbelievable performance from Ryker Frank along the ground for the Huskies. But also I want to highlight Maya Turner, the Minnesota native, who is in her second year kicking for the Manitoba Bisons, setting a new career long of a 48-yard field goal. 48 yards, nothing to sniff at. I remember when Maya played her first game, there were a bunch of, frankly, losers talking about how she's just there because she's a woman and this is a tokenism thing and she probably doesn't even have a good leg. Well, suck on 48 yards. How about that? Maya Turner is a legitimate player. And if before you even gave her a chance, you wrote her off, then give your head a shake and just be better next time. Because guess what? She belongs out there 100%.
I believe that was the second longest field goal in U Sports this year. I think I heard that somewhere. So
yeah, kicking is an adventure. Kicking is an adventure at the U Sports level. I know that Laval had a 56 yarder earlier this year. They also had a game winner of over 50 yards. So I don't think it's the second longest, but there's lots of kickers in U Sports who cannot consistently make kicks beyond 45 yards. Maya Turner is right up there with the leaders in percentage on the year. She's now got a 48 yarder. Good for her.
She's 18 for 23 in her career. And I won't name the individual, but the kicker who preceded her at Manitoba, I remember, was all mad that she was getting the opportunity, but he wasn't making kicks. Maya Turner's making kicks. It's that simple. Doesn't matter who you are. You make the kicks, especially as you noted, Hodge. You know, I would argue even sometimes at the U Sports level outside of 40, it can be hit or miss. She's hitting it from 48 and consistently putting the ball through the uprights. She has fully earned that full-time job with the Manitoba Bisons.
It's now time for Hodge's heritage. Oh,
are we not going to talk about the Panda game at all?
Oh, I guess we should. Well, you skipped over it. You were the one who skipped over it.
I'm trying to give York some love here. Come on now.
Oh, fair. Okay, I'll talk about the Panda game really quick. If you are in driving distance of Ottawa, you need to go to the Panda game every year. The annual rivalry game between the GGs and Carleton Ravens sells out TD Place Stadium. TD Place, the Red Blacks have only drawn one crowd this year, larger than this game. It is unbelievable. It is off the chain. Our wonderful contributor, Santino Filoso, has a full game story about the Panda game. It is pandemonium in Ottawa, and I love that this game exists. Frankly, every team in U Sports needs to try to build a marquee game like this one. I know some homecoming games have done really well attendance-wise this year. Montreal Laval always draws brilliantly, but this game is on another level. And another great game this year with the Ottawa GGs winning a sixth straight Panda game, but was a very, very close game between the two OUA rivals.
Pedro stays with Ottawa. And guys, somebody nationally needs to pick this game up. You know, I'm not saying it doesn't get the respect it deserves based on the way that it's put out now, but TSN, Sportsnet, CTV, I don't care who it is. This game needs to be on national television because it has everything. And dare I say, fellas, I hope I'm not wrong saying this, correct me if I am, that it might be, depending on the playoffs, the first sellout so far at TD Place this year.
Well, the Red Blacks drew one crowd that was larger. This had 23,500. The Red Blacks got to 24 one time. But
okay, so one crowd larger. But this thing needs... I shouldn't say needs, deserves more attention. Mm-hmm. TV executives, get it done.
What I would love, what I think the solution is for U Sports is you permanently make that 1 p.m. Eastern time slot just the U Sports game of the week. And if it's in Saskatoon and you got to play a morning game, it is what it is. But it has to be the same time each week. It has to be the same place for people to find it. You got to spoon feed the audience. And maybe the best thing to do, especially with CFL being on CTV this year, is maybe that can be a double feature, right? You put the U Sports game at 1 p.m. every single week, Eastern time, and then you put the CTV game on at 4. Or if you have to move, you know what I mean? But that I think would be the model that would work, but I agree with you, Dunk. It's not on national television, and that sucks. It's now time for Hodge's Heritage Moment. On this day in 1933, I don't think any of our listeners will remember this one. If you do, shout out to you for still being alive. Well done. The Ottawa Rough Riders defeated the Hamilton Tiger Cats. Sorry, not Tiger Cats. The Tigers. They were not the Tiger Cats. The Hamilton Tigers by a score of 14-13, ending a 25-game losing streak that dated back to November 1928. The longest losing streak, or pardon me, this remains the longest losing streak in the history of Canadian professional football, spanning almost 5 years. Ottawa would finish the season third in the Interprovincial Rugby Football Union with a record of 3-3. And for those curious, in the modern CFL, the longest losing streak ever belongs to the Shreveport Pirates, who lost 14 consecutive games back in 1994. So dare I say, this record of 25 losing games in a row will never be matched or beaten, or for the sake of whichever team that is, I certainly hope it doesn't get beaten or surpassed.
Let's go to the 3-minute drill. The Hamilton Tiger Cats can still technically make the playoffs, Hodge, provided the Tabbies win out and the Toronto Argonauts lose out. What are the chances that actually happens, though?
0.01%. It could happen theoretically, but it won't. As
so you're saying there's a chance.
Indeed, yes, but no. Jeshrin Antwi was traded to the BC Lions in exchange for a third-round pick as part of a rare trade deadline deal in the CFL. Did that move make sense for BC?
Look, I've long been an advocate of the Lions adding a Canadian running back who can also chip in on special teams. Antwi is that, but this price was steep, and it reeks of a bit of a desperation move from a club that has a lot of people on the 6-game injured list right now. And a lot of people there, I think, for cap reasons as well, that they don't want to have to activate early. Antwi gives them the ability to flesh out their ratio and fill the spots that they need to fill. Canadian quarterback Curtis Rourke had another impressive performance for the University of Indiana. Actually, it's Indiana University, gentlemen. Passing for 380 yards and 3 touchdowns to help the Hoosiers improve to 6-0 on the season. Right now, he is 5th in NCAA passing yardage. Could he be a high pick in the upcoming NFL draft?
That question will be answered by how he plays the rest of the season. Nebraska at home, October 19th. Washington at home, October 26th. At Michigan State. Then Michigan comes to town. November 23rd, the Hoosiers go to Ohio State. That will be a huge game for Rourke to put out some quality film for NFL scouts. And then they finish the regular season against Purdue at Indiana. That's quite a run in the Big Ten, but it's part of the reason why this is one of the highest quality conferences in the NCAA. And if Rourke plays well through that stretch, then he can elevate his NFL draft stock. The Toronto Argonauts have signed Canadian offensive lineman Sage Dockstader, who the team selected in the second round during the 2021 CFL draft. Could he make an impact with the Argos this season, or do we have to wait a little bit?
Dockstader, I think, is this team's left tackle of the future. He is massive at 6'7". He's been listed previously as high as, I think, 360 pounds. He's got to get a little bit lighter on his feet for the CFL, but he is somebody who could absolutely be that ratio-breaking tackle. Bailey Devine Scott, a player with whom you have a personal connection, JC, made his first career CFL start this past week at strong side linebacker for Calgary. How'd you think he did?
Well, it warmed my heart to be able to see him live, and I thought he did really well. 3 defensive tackles, another on special teams, and didn't get exposed. Obviously, that defense held BC to no touchdowns offensively, and you've got to be really happy with that in your first career start. Do I think he's a long-term solution at strong side linebacker? Probably not, but he wasn't out of place in that game, and from where he's come from Australia to paying his way to a Division III college that could never produce a professional football player in their history, to being a third round afterthought in the global draft, a round that doesn't exist anymore, scratching and clawing his way into the roster. Now he's starting games and he's leading the Stampeders in special teams tackles for this season. That's a feel-good story for a guy who did it all his own way. I couldn't be happier for Bailey Devine Scott. The Saskatchewan Roughriders signed veteran Canadian defensive lineman Benoit Marion following stints with Toronto and Hamilton earlier this season. Is that a smart move?
I believe it is. Marion can make an impact on special teams and give you some Canadian depth along the defensive line. Shamar Bridges, the outstanding rookie for the Ticats, announced he's going to miss the rest of the 2024 season due to injury. How big of a blow is that for the Tabbies?
It's a huge blow. He's a great volume target for them. I also think it's a big blow for him personally because he was probably going to be the most outstanding rookie in the CFL. And with him being out, it's giving other guys an opportunity to close that gap late in the year, potentially take the award from him. Two members of the Alouettes were fined for simulating the firing of a weapon during a celebration. Is this really something the league should be fining players for?
I do believe it is. Now, in this instance, I didn't actually see what the fines were issued for. So if anybody has and wants to inform me as to the nature of it, go right ahead. But generally, when these fines have been issued for simulating the firing of the weapon, it's been a pretty egregious demonstration in the past. I'm thinking of Keandre Smith in the end zone earlier this year, bringing out the pistol and firing it. It hasn't been like the NFL has been the last few weeks, where it's sly finger guns or marking a first down and they're throwing out the flag. The league does a good job. I think this is a finable offense. You don't want that being advertised on television. Good on the CFL. The St. Mary's Huskies beat the Acadia Axemen 27-5 on Friday night as the teams combined for 35 penalties for 328 yards. Have you ever seen a game that chippy, Dunk?
There's been some games like that. Definitely, I may or may not have been a part of some when I was at Guelph, but I mean, you look across football and there are intense rivalries that I'm sure would have gotten in and around that kind of penalty yardage. Saskatchewan Roughriders defensive back Deontay Williams was suspended one game for dropping Red Blacks receiver Khalil Pimpleton on his head. The CFL called it an illegal and dangerous tackle. And part of that discipline was because Williams also committed a non-football act by striking another Ottawa player. Was the one-game suspension deserved?
Obviously, you can't drop people on their head and then punch somebody. Like, it, I don't think it takes more explaining than that. Don't do this. The Riders, and I'll credit Jamie Nye for tweeting out the statistic, they lead the league in unnecessary roughness penalties. So for Rider fans who are sick and tired of taking these penalties, I don't want to see you blaming the officials or blaming the league or the command center for these things. How about you blame the team you cheer for and say, we are trying to win a Grey Cup. We want you to win a Grey Cup. Please stop dropping players on their head and taking penalties after the whistle. We can't have this. So yes, it was deserved. Hopefully Williams does better. And I will give him credit for saying that he personally apologized to Pimpleton, and Pimpleton was very gracious in accepting that. So nice to hear he did that. But no, you can't do this. Did 100% deserve a suspension. On that note, we thank you as always for listening to the Three Down Nation podcast. This might be our record longest episode ever. We hope you enjoyed it. We will see you next week. Enjoy week 19 in the CFL. JC and I will be back later this week for our picks. We'll see you then.
New Balance recently announced the addition of All-American Cooper Flagg to the NB family, joining Cameron Brink and an elite player roster in the brand's mission of growing the game with the next generation of athletes. In part of New Balance's ongoing commitment to supporting athletes off the court, the Boston-based brand plans to work with Cooper on community initiatives in his home state of Maine. To shop the two-way V5, Hesse Low V2, and all New Balance basketball products, visit newbalance.com today.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger. For thousands of appetizing ingredients that inspire countless mouthwatering meals. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week, and up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with points. So you can get big flavors and big savings. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.